Chapter 6, Crag McGrag in the Heat of the Night. "Let the 11th Annual Destination Corporation Company Retreat begin," Ted Naders proclaimed, popping an empty pretzel bag with his fist to a roar of approval from Don Livers. Flecks of the ham sandwich spewed in all directions as Don laughed through the flame's dancing orange reflection on his face. Ted fit the role of file clerk to a T. Even for the retreat, promising to at least be a half-assed nature tutorial, he'd managed to prepare himself in what Crag felt must be a stereotypical file jockey's uniform. Ted bore the wrinkle-free, white, short-sleeve button-up collared shirt, thick black-rimmed foggy glasses, pleated khakis, and brown dad loafers. He had the perfect pockmarked and pimply round pinkish face, the overwhelmed expression and lazy mustache. To top it all off, the black plastic flap of a pocket protector peered out from his breast pocket, housing a family of two black pens and a mechanical pencil. "Those must be the only clothes he owns," Crag laughed to himself. They were in a new clearing. Crag, Lana, and the Levers showed up with Paul laid out on a clumsy stretcher thrown together with two heavy, misshapen wooden rods and a stretched-out American flag parachute. The smaller group consisted of Ted Naders, Nancy Marcos, and the paralyzed but conscious and complaining Chen Wen. Crag's group had found the others not far from Paul, close to a small stream. Deanne had spotted their torch in the dark before Nancy and Ted began calling to them. The group now had a couple small tents and supplies Ted found stored inside the flight seats themselves. No one had thought to look in their own. They decided to camp in the small clearing as the hole in the tree line above was large enough to let extra stars provide extra light.
"I can't believe no one has a phone. How do 7 people lose their damn phone? It makes no sense," Chen whined from the opening of his tent. "No one can find us if there's no GPS. How will they find us? You tell me. How will they?"
Chen couldn't sit up to say this, being paralyzed from the chest down, but he was wiggling his large head to make sure everyone saw his frustration.
"No phones means no rescue. Give him another piece of this so he'll shut up."
Don held up a small bite of mashed bread, mayonnaise, and ham from his half-eaten sandwich to his wife, who grabbed the scrap stumbling up to her feet before making off toward Chen in the tent. The CFO had been keeping it in his fanny pack the whole time. Crag was taking microscopic bites from a granola bar, the one edible to make it down there with him, somehow managing to stay safe and unmashed in his pocket. Nancy Marcos was without food at all, and sitting next to her he had to at least offer. She shook her head softly, though, refusing. She looked a little frazzled, he thought. It's been a frazzling kind of day. She was keeping her head busy, alternating between her thoughts and the fire and her right hand's running of a finger through the dirt. "Are we sure this is everyone?" Lana Tran asked, hugging her knees.
"Is this anyone?" Don giggled.
Ted nearly choked on the sandwich with laughter. "This is everyone," Nancy chimed in, now also knee-hugging. "I was sitting furthest back on the plane. I counted." "Yep," Deanne Levers agreed. Levers, Naders, McGrag, Simon, Nguyen, Tran, and Marcos. "That's everyone," she assured them. "Don't they usually have a tour guide or spiritual advisor for these things?" Nancy asked. "To lead the trust falls?" "That's Don," Deanne told her. "De facto guide and advisor for the last 10 destination retreats."
"Not gonna be much help as a guide out here, though, I'm afraid." Don took another bite. "I don't know where we are," he chomped.
"Does anyone know where we are?" Nancy asked, checking every face. There was no response. "Where were we supposed to go?" she asked Don.
"I don't know." "Then how do we know this isn't it?" Ted asked.
"We don't," said Deanne, with the flame's reflection in her glasses. "It very well could be the place."
"Well, I don't think our airplane was supposed to explode," Ted laughed, annoyed.
He began pushing his glasses closer to his face as it became agitated.
"Maybe we're in Montana," said Crag. "I don't think so," said Don, eyeing him.
There was a silence now as they finished their last morsels. Everyone looked worn out, at least a little shocked, and almost definitely uncertain of where they were and what was going to happen to them. Already, of their flock, one was in an apparent coma and another paralyzed. "I doubt anyone wants to deal with team-building activities right now," said Lana Tran. "I know I don't." The head corporate attorney ate many pretzels. Her shirt and khaki shorts were covered with crumbs lost in the rush of hunger. She looked distant and seemed to have trouble focusing on anything for too long, and was constantly looking over her shoulder. Awkward fire crackled between them in the dark.
"What about the pilot?" Nancy gasped. I forgot about the pilot."
Everyone looked at her, surprised they hadn't thought of the same thing.
"The pilot's head hit a rock. When I found him, there was a big bloody split right down the middle of his head," Ted Nader spoke, staring at the fire.
Ted took another bite of his sandwich, all eyes fixated on him now, watching to see if there was more.
"What can we do to help Paul and Chen? We gotta get them out of here," Crag said to the elder duo.
"Help them what? Sleep?" Ted smiled through the flickering flames. "It sounds like that last bite did Chen in for the night. Your friend the janitor hasn't made a peep in hours.
Sleeping like babies," Ted snickers.
"They got it better than all of us."
"I don't know him, I just know his music."
"Right. The janitor's music, Ted teased him. So apparently, Paul Simon had been working in Destination's custodial department for years. Don Levers referred to Simon as the janitor when they first found him hours earlier. Simon apparently traded his infamy for punishing slave labor, a not wholly uncommon story for those mostly unknown, but somewhat recognized artists who suffer their years in the shadows, only to eventually find themselves entertaining the notion that it's where they belong, almost survival thinking. Still, the revelation had silently devastated Cragg. What little he knew of Paul's career-long adversity to the public had to do with refusal to incorporate the wishes and ideas of sponsors into his art, and the refusal to tone it down in any way, shape, or form. Cragg had always imagined Paul was laying low to write the ultimate epic. The first three albums had been a start, with the singer famously releasing three completely blank covers, no words or titles anywhere, and when any of the albums were downloaded from the internet, they came with a blank white thumbnail, and all the songs registered as untitled, by unknown artists. Cragg and the other handful of Paul Simon fans had done their best to name the albums and songs by way of posting to online Paul Simon community message boards, but now it looked like the singer had given up the fight completely. Cragg hung his head in silence and watched the dirt for a minute. "Aren't most of you Executive Destination members?" Cragg asked Don. "This is an executive team-building retreat," Don replied with a smile. "So what are we doing here?" the designer asked, motioning to Nancy and himself. "Mingling, so we can get a better idea of morale at the bottom."
"I work on the same floor as you," Nancy grimaced at Don, "and Lana, and Deanne."
"So you work with Simon Masters?" Ted Naders asked her.
"Sort of.
Sort of.
I'm basically his personal assistant, but I've never seen him before," Nancy explained.
"How does that work?"
They were all staring, awaiting her response. It made her visibly uncomfortable.
"Who cares? We're all gonna die!"
Chen interrupted, screaming from his tent.
"You know, it's too bad no one could find their phone," Ted said, watching the orange and black move on his folded hands.
"Missing your nightly date with porn?" Cragg mused.
"Ha!" Don suddenly yelled. "Porn? Listen, kid, that porn shit is for animals. There's no actual excitement in any of it. It's all a trick. Real men have a real life. They don't have time for that porn shit. Real life and its experience is porn on steroids. It's super porn!"
"What'd you say your name was again?
Cragg, right?"
"Cragg."
"Cragg?"
Don looked over his shoulder at Ted, then brought his attention back.
"What kind of name is Cragg? You sure you don't mean Craig?"
"I'm positive I don't mean Craig. I had it legally changed 3 months ago."
"Ah, after you got the job, is what you're saying. You've been at Destination 6 months?"
"I guess so."
"I thought so. I didn't think there was any company, especially ours, that would hire someone with a name like Cragg McCragg. Especially not ours. Simon Masters sure wouldn't have approved of that."
"You legally changed it? Why the hell'd you do that? Why to that?"
Cragg looked in the CFO's eyes.
"Mostly to confuse swollen assholes like you, Don."
And that shut him up for a minute. The designer couldn't help but notice the rage boiling in the corner of Don's eyes, who suddenly jerked his head back, seeming to forget the entire incident.
"On that note, we're gonna try making some sort of shelter for tonight."
Ted stood up.
"Anyone who wants to help is more than welcome."
Don stood up to join him. They walked off to the perimeter of campfire light, picking up random fragments of trees as they stepped. Lana made her way toward Chen and Paul.
"You need this?"
Cragg offered the wadded American flag parachute to Nancy.
"It's pretty thick. I was thinking of just rolling myself up in it."
"I can't take your bed away from you," Nancy smiled. He recognized her from a few hellos and random elevator/lunchroom sightings in the Destination building. She had a small but nice face under jet-black hair that hung to her shoulders. For a second, he imagined her head would lay in the perfect spot on his chest if they hugged. Ted Naders and Don Levers were laughing again, about 50 feet away. Cragg tried to forget that he had no phone, not even a compass. He tried to sit still and let his senses adjust lest he overreact to every sound the woods made. Before the retreat, he tried a couple guided meditation videos found playing around in the screens, and now tried to reimagine the cheesy new age music and soothing female voice. The real voice of Paul Simon came instead, ringing out into the night so loud it woke the birds.
"There's a train headed west for its passenger's sake. It's a curious tale on the road of mistakes. Haven't we learned that these old walls can crack? That it can't happen here is a matter of fact."
"What was that garbage?" Ted called as he trotted up, the pocket protector bouncing on his breast.
Don lagged behind. They stopped in front of Cragg, hands fastened at their hips.
"He was singing to you," said Cragg, turning back to the fire.
"Tomorrow you two are gonna have to go try and find food while you look for the other packs,"
Don gestured to Cragg and Nancy.
"We need more tents. We are gonna find the other packs in the cockpit, then work on this campsite so everyone can get a good sleep tomorrow night."
The pair walked off again.
No wonder he has to go on retreats every year, Craig chuckled. Nancy didn't hear because she'd already drifted away in the dirt, fast asleep and snuggled like a bean in a star-spangled burrito.
Whispers in my ear. the woods, house in the woods. House in the woods, house in the woods. Back behind the green, there's a house in the woods. When the secrets inside are rough to no good, they're not the kind to do what they should. In a house in the woods, house in the woods. When the portraits are blood and the windows are black, and the shadows will hide and wave to attack. But you never know, cause the mirrors are cracked. In a house in the woods, house in the woods. House in the woods, house in the woods. House in the woods, house in the woods. House in the woods, house in the woods.
Listening to everybody else. shadows.